Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony. It is February 29th, 2016. Happy Leap Day, year, whatever. We are on the eve of Super Tuesday, and we have so much to talk about, so much going on, so much we're going to be doing tomorrow, including bringing you a live stream of everything that's going on. So I have a guest with me tonight. Molly is here again.
Hello, everyone.
Rachel has the night off, and of course, I'm Travis, and we're going to be talking about quite a bit. So where to start? I think we should start with what's going on here locally. I am not only going to be caucusing, but it looks like I'm going to be a caucus captain for Bernie Sanders out here in the Aurora area. How about you? Where are you going to be coxing? And if I may ask, who will you be coxing for?
Oh, gosh. That's a loaded question.
You don't have to answer.
Okay, the first part is easy. I'm going to be caucusing at an elementary school nearby me, Mission Viejo Elementary, which is in Southeast Aurora. And again, last time I mentioned that I'm in a pretty swingy district, so it's going to be interesting to see who shows up tomorrow. I'm very curious. And as far as who I am caucusing for... I'm fully going to caucus for Hillary too. I think I'm still walking in undecided.
Really?
I will say I'm leaning more.
Oh no, you're one of those people I need to do the sales pitch to tomorrow then.
No, I'm leaning more toward Bernie.
Okay.
I am, only because he represents, I think, more of my ideals. And then Hillary speaks to my more pragmatic side.
Uh-huh.
But I still, I'm going to be happy no matter who wins, especially looking at the other side of the aisle. I'm going to be perfectly happy with wherever we end up.
Okay, that sounds good. Rachel is going to be caucusing for Hillary.
Yes.
Dana might still at the last minute try to be a caucus captain, but I think he's too behind the eight ball at this point.
Yeah.
Although if they need him, I don't think they'll need him where he's caucusing.
Probably not.
Where I'm caucusing, they need people, and that's why they've been blowing up my phone and my email the last few days. I've also been told, sort of not off the record, but sort of wink, wink, hint, hint, that it's a heavily Hillary territory, they think, out here in Northeast Aurora, which, if you're listening from not in the Denver area, is a suburb. Well, it's a city technically, but it's basically suburbs northeast of Denver proper, or downtown Denver, basically.
Yeah, and Aurora is a huge city. Yeah. I also live in Aurora, but you know, you hear Aurora and it just conjures up this image of this gigantic city. It spans three different counties, and this area, it doesn't actually surprise me to hear that it might be more Hillary territory. It's very diverse.
Mm-hmm.
There's a large African American population here. There's a large
Hispanic
population, Latino population. There's
some older folks too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Lots of old, you know, old residents of Denver area, and there's a lot of you know, refugee population in this area. So. It's a very diverse area, so I think it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, they're worried about – what they told me was they're worried about Bernie supporters being turned away, and they almost hinted maybe intimidated.
Huh.
So I was like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see – maybe that's just a little paranoia from the local Bernie people here.
I've been seeing a lot of paranoia from a lot of people
lately.
Yeah,
there's a lot of it rampant. But that's kind of what's going on here, and we're going to be live streaming on our YouTube channel, live stream. Just go to YouTube, look for Irreverent Testimony, and the live stream will be active as of 7:30 our time, I think. It'll be 6:30 our time, 7:30 Central time, 8:30 Eastern time. Our good friend Pierre, who started this podcast with me down in Texas, is going to do his voting. They have a primary down there, so he'll be voting early for Bernie. And then he's going to set up Mission Control with charts and graphs and your latest Super Tuesday results. And then we're all going to be trying to Skype in if we can.
Yeah.
All of us. Molly, myself, Dana, Rachel, and then anybody else who wants to.
Yep.
Giving you the heads up on how the caucuses are progressing, if it's organized, if it's chaotic, who seems to be winning, how the supporters are, any controversies, any coin flips. And by the way, I figured out, I didn't figure out, it's part of my job to understand how and why the coin flips work. And The media, as usual, has the whole thing completely wrong on coin flips, and once I explain it to you, it's going to make a lot more sense. Yeah, there's math I'm going to have to do tomorrow. It's not difficult. I can handle it.
I'm a social worker. We don't do math.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do some. So that about is more or less covers it. What people have no idea, by the way, since Colorado doesn't get polled, and it's really hard to poll caucuses, nobody has any idea, but the feeling is Bernie has a bit of an advantage in Colorado and may win, but I have no idea.
No.
We'll see.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I know he's going to do really well in Formosa, Denver proper, obviously Boulder, Fort Collins, but then down in like Pueblo and the western parts, that should be Hillary country. If she can make up enough of that to overcome the big population centers, we'll see. But, you know, caucusing is weird. Caucusing is funny. We'll see what happens. That's a disadvantage, too, for caucus states, I think, with Bernie, is that there's a lot of young people and first-time caucus goers like me. I've never had a caucus before. Florida and Texas don't do caucuses. So we don't know how it works. Some of the older folks – well, it's only been around since 2003 here, but still, that's enough time to have a few under your belt.
Yeah.
And for the older folks, they know how it works, so they just have a built-in advantage. So we'll see. But anyway, now we're going to talk about what's going on the Republican side here. And I only kind of got – I had heard there was something funny about what the way they were doing it. And then Molly did a little more research and was just kind of like, you know, five alarms, halt, stop the presses.
Yeah.
They're doing – they decided to do some crazy shit, and it's going to be interesting tomorrow. And Molly, I'm going to let you kind of explain what's going on the GOP caucusing side here in Colorado tomorrow.
Yeah, this is, you know, I remember inklings and hints of this after the 2012 presidential election with the, I guess we could call it Ron Paul shenanigans on the floor of the Republican National Convention.
Yeah, well, let's back up and explain that a little bit first, what happened exactly.
Yeah, so my understanding is I'm not a Republican, so this is what I understand from what I've read in the media, but what I understand is that there were some delegates who went to the convention pledged
to Romney.
You know, to Romney as the popular vote winner or the caucus winner in the various states. So these delegates, these statewide delegates, went to the convention and voted for or cast their support behind Ron Paul the candidate that they were pledged to. And so it's kind of been this understanding, I guess, this civility, this decorum, that when delegates go to a national convention, they will throw their support behind the candidate who either is the popular vote winner, you know, is obviously the front runner, or whoever their county, their state, their, you know, whoever sent them tells them to support.
And if your party has proper leadership at the top, that, of course, is not an issue.
Yes. So clearly in 2012, something broke down on the Republican side. And so after that debacle, shenanigans, whatever we want to call it, the Republican National the Republican National Party passed some rules stating that it was no longer optional or suggested or a may in the rules of you need to support this particular candidate if your state has voted this way. It was a requirement. And so they put some very stringent rules in place stating that you are bound to support this person. And if you do not support this person, not only will you no longer be a delegate, but your vote will be cast as if you had voted the way that you were supposed to vote, quote unquote. So there were not only was this a rule, it turned from a may to a shall, and if you know anything about government lingo, that's a big deal. Not only was that rule put into place, but there was also penalties involved. Your delegate count, your representation at the convention was reduced by 50%, and the votes that were cast for whoever you were pledged to, not who you actually voted for.
Yeah, the whole purpose to not repeat any of the Ron Paul shenanigans of 2012.
Yeah, so it's kind of this internal battle, I think. You know, we see this on the DNC side a little bit as well, but I was not as tuned in on how drastically hard-fought this battle has been between the establishment, the elite, whoever you want to call them, in the RNC, and these outsiders, these, whatever you want to call them. So What Colorado did in response to this rule change was they said, we're taking our ball and we're going home. So Colorado, the Colorado GOP decided that they would not hold a presidential straw poll tomorrow in their caucus. So I don't know exactly what this means, because essentially we're not going to get results from tomorrow's caucus for the Republicans. We won't know.
We're still trying to figure this out in our heads. They're having GOP caucuses tomorrow, just like the Democrats. People are going to show up ostensibly, just like the Democrats, but they're not going to hold a vote and say, who do you prefer for president? Not officially. But they're still going to be electing delegates to go to the county and then eventually the state. Right. So
who knows? That's where I'm stuck. I mean, that's where we're stuck. So I think, you know, if they elect, you know, they have to elect their county delegates, then they go to the, you know, judicial district, or I'm sorry, the congressional districts, just like, you know, we talked about last time, and then those delegates go to the state. And then, so essentially what this means is that the Colorado GOP decided that they wanted our state delegates to be uncommitted walking into the convention. Instead of being bound to whatever votes were cast by the Colorado Republicans, they're walking into the Republican National Convention uncommitted. Now, in a race where you have a clear front runner, that may not be as big of a deal. But walking into this convention uncommitted, kind of a big deal, because we don't really know.
And how many delegates are they going to be from Colorado? Do we know?
I don't know that. I don't have a number, and I think that's an important. I think it's 66, right? For
that
the,
sounds
the,
familiar.
The Democrats, and right. So I don't know if that's the same. I don't know how the. I don't know. We're going to have to do more research, because this all of a sudden just kind of came in, you know, into focus and into view. The Denver Post, which is our only local paper still left standing, the editorial board came out with a pretty strong editorial today.
And just said, what the hell are you guys
what
doing?
What the hell happened here? And I think it kind of registered on people's radars after 2012, and then the decision was made last summer by the GOP, the state GOP party.
And it got buried on page 12C. Yep. This is not front page news, you know, a year ago or whatever.
And then all of a sudden, the day before the caucus, we're all like,
what? And we're Democrats.
Right.
But I have to imagine, I could be wrong about this. Maybe all the Republicans in town know this, and they're prepared for this. But I have to imagine, one, they're pissed. See, I don't listen to local right-wing radio.
Yeah, I don't either.
So I don't know.
Maybe we should
and
do
CPR
some reconnaissance.
And CPR hasn't said anything about it.
No.
Yeah, so
I haven't heard anything. I haven't heard it on Colorado Matters. No.
This seems to have flown completely under everybody's radar. So it could be we're either completely missing something, which I don't think so, because we just read the Post article from today.
Yep.
We read the Colorado GOP response, which didn't really address it in any significant way.
No.
So unless we're missing something, I can't. What I see happening is you're going to have a lot of Republicans showing up tomorrow thinking, all right, I'm going to go cast my vote for Trump. I'm going to go cast my vote for Cruz. I'm going to go cast my vote for Kasich, Carson, whatever.
Yeah.
And they're going to get there, and they're going to be like, what the fuck is this?
Yep.
Because they're going to be asked to sit down and vote for county delegates based on...
What? We don't know. I don't know.
I guess the people they know. Now, I have to think that there's going to be off-the-books whisper campaigns going on in the room when you get there.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're going to like line up all the people who want to run for county delegate. But see, county delegates usually, you don't necessarily go in knowing you're going to be a county delegate either, right? You're just a caucus goer who they kind of pick out if you have the most energy or you speak the best or you seem really, really motivated, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that how it works? I'm guessing. I haven't been to a caucus.
And like volunteer for it and say, this is something I really want to do. I want to get more involved. And, you know, but I don't imagine how the energy is going to feel tomorrow when they show up in the room and
there's no straw poll.
There's no straw poll. They're kind of, their voice is going to be, you know, I was thinking through this. I'm like, if the Colorado GOP party is so, I mean, I don't know what the right word is, frightened, worried about what their constituents are going to vote for or who they're going to vote for, what does that say about the relationship between the party and the people? I mean, I think we have a problem maybe sometimes on the Democratic side, but this is a it feels to me like, I mean, if I was
Republican, I'd be pissed.
Yeah, because it feels like a usurpation of my voice.
There's no official capacity in which, if you're a Republican voter and you want to go select your preference for president tomorrow on the Republican side, it's at best a roundabout way of doing that. So what I think they're going to have to do, and I'm going to try, because anybody can walk in and observe a caucus.
Yes.
No matter who you're even if you're not registered, you can just say, I'm an observer, and you can walk in and stand on the sidelines. I don't know if I'm going to have time, since I'm a caucus captain for Bernie, but if I have time, mm-hmm. I'm going to try to get to a Republican caucus site to see just what the hell's going on.
Right.
Because what my blind wild guess, and I could be dead ass wrong about this, is that they're going to show up, they're going to figure out or line up all the people who want to run for county delegate and say, here's so-and-so, he supports Trump. Show of hands for a vote. Mm-hmm. Here's so-and-so, he supports Kasich. Mm-hmm. And then they'll go through it and just pick them that way, and then award delegates. So it kind of works out to the same thing without an official straw poll.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make sort of sense, at least, but without any, like, official tallies for a straw poll. Yeah. I mean, you thought, like, the talks about dirty tricks and lies and games were bad.
Yep.
In Iowa and Nevada. I mean, I can't imagine what it's going to be like tomorrow on the Republican side.
I can't either, and I think we can say pretty assuredly, I mean, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think we can say pretty assuredly we're not going to get results from the presidential caucus tomorrow for the GOP.
This has to be what they're going to do, is that they're going to work out, I know we're not going to see numbers, but they're going to work out the number of delegates, at least
pledged,
based on the, because there's nothing that I saw that they're stopping the speeches, right?
No, I don't think so.
So what I guess they're going to do is everybody who wants to run for a county delegate, but it's going to be one giant room. It's not like the preferences like they've been doing in caucuses. It's going to be one giant room of angry Republicans, and then everybody's going to make their speech. Or maybe they'll limit the speeches for the – I guess they would have to, since there's no polling.
Right,
they're going to limit the speeches to the people who are going to vote for delegate and then vote based on that. And so it kind of works out the same way.
Yeah, I could see that. So maybe we may get delegate counts tomorrow.
Then we'll have no idea what the preference is.
Yeah.
They'll know. Or maybe by word of mouth. Or say like – okay, this place voted for 8 delegates who supported Trump and 4 who supported Cruz and 2 who supported Rubio or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think that's how it has to work. But I think we can also say that our delegates, that the state delegates that go to the Republican National Convention are uncommitted. So they have the freedom now, my understanding is they have the freedom now. Yeah. They are not bound by this subsection 16A, whatever rule that was we read.
True. I haven't even gotten to that yet. Just in my mind, I'm still trying to work out the caucus process. Because let me explain how it's going to work on the Democratic.
It's going to be a bunch of baboons chasing each other.
Let me explain how it's going to work on the Democratic side, right? We're going to walk in, and they're going to basically say, okay, you in the Bernie camp, go over here. Right. You in the Hillary camp, go over here. They're going to organize and take a total vote. Then they're going to count that vote, and based on that vote, there's a math formula, and I can tell you what it is if you want to know.
We want to know.
Okay, great.
Yes.
So there's the votes in what they call the preference poll for Bernie and Hillary. That means you divide up the room, and you figure out how many people are for Bernie, how many people are for Hillary. Then you multiply that number by the number of allotted delegates for that precinct, mm-hmm. right? So let's say my precinct tomorrow, let's say there's 10 allotted county delegates. And let's say 100 people raise their hand for Bernie. And so 100 times 10, so now you have a number of 1,000. Then you divide that number by the total number of caucus attendees. Let's say 200 people came to the caucus in total. Okay? That means there's 5 delegates to elect. Let's say on Hillary's side, this is for the sake of argument, just don't get pissed off. Let's say 150... are voting for Hillary. 150 times 10 is 1,500. Divided by 200 comes to 7.5.
Yeah.
7.5. And then I'll get to the 0.5s in a second, because that's where we get into coin flips. Okay. And then those numbers have to match up to the total number of delegates. So I might have already screwed up the math, but that's how it works, basically. Right. But on the Republican side, they're skipping all this.
Yes.
They're not counting anything.
I don't know what they're counting. We don't know what they're... I mean, I'm looking at this chart that Travis is holding.
Anyway, I skipped a part. I'm sorry. So after we figure out the number of delegates, let's say in this precinct, Bernie gets 5 and Hillary gets 7. I said 8, but let's pretend there's 12, right?
Right.
So let's make it nice even numbers just for the sake of this discussion. So Bernie gets 5 and Hillary gets 7. Okay. Then we go back to our little camps, our Bernie and Hillary camps, and then those camps then elect the county delegates to represent their person to go on, and you have to make sure, like, okay, are you going to be in town? This is why I can't actually be a county delegate. I may be out of town for part of April.
Oh.
But, like, you have to make sure are you in town on these dates? Can you actually do this? Can you show up and do – and that's one of my jobs is when somebody says, I want to be a delegate, I'm like, can you do it? Like, because if you don't, we're screwed, and then we lose that delegate.
Yep.
So that can happen, too. And I'm sure that probably does happen.
I'm sure. Sick kids.
Yeah,
whatever,
yeah,
you know?
Whatever. So you have to make damn sure, like, you know, if it's, you know, 90-year-old person on death's door, you might reconsider, but whatever. The point is, that's how they do it. On the other side, they're skipping the whole math part, and they're skipping the whole preference part, electing county delegates.
Which is so Republican, isn't it? Skip the
right,
math.
Right.
Skip the math.
Just drink out of the river. It's fine.
We have faith that it'll all work out.
So, oh man, to be a fly on the wall.
I wish we knew someone who was going
to
be caucusing.
Who has nothing to do.
Who has nothing to do.
Or is caucusing with Republicans and give us a spy report. We might know somebody.
Yeah, I would be really curious to know, because this is the first, I mean, clearly this is the first year that this has happened. This was passed after 2012, and just last summer.
Rachel's parents might be, and they would at least tell us. I don't think they'd Skype in live and tell us, but they might tell us, like, what happened.
Right, just send an email or a text or something. Just say,
like, how's this working out? Is it? Of course, that could be different in every caucus site, right?
There
could be a caucus site where it depends on who is running the site.
Which... I mean, if you go to the bigger picture, like, what does that mean for our democracy? I mean, we're just having, like, people deciding.
Well, I hate the caucus thing, but now in the last few days I've discovered that caucuses are way cheaper than primaries.
Yes.
Which is why a lot of states do it, and which you're probably going to see more caucuses, not less, as we go through time here, because it's cheaper. You don't need electronic voting machines and
Right.
All
but
that stuff.
It definitely begs the question when a situation like this comes up, and it can look different from precinct to precinct, county to county. I mean...
Well, before we get too off of this, now I'm going to explain coin flips.
Yay!
So if you paid attention to the Iowa caucuses, you saw the media breathlessly reporting that Hillary was awarded a bunch of delegates based on coin flips. The media, except for if you watched all night and heard the one expert who explained it get drowned out, got it completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I, now being a caucus captain, now I know what coin flips are and how they work and why they're used. And they actually make perfect sense. To feed into a larger point, if you still think it's ridiculous, just blame the caucus process. Mm-hmm. But let me put it this way. The math you have to use to figure out how to get a delegate is never going to come to a whole number. It's always going to be a fraction, right? Mm-hmm. So let's go back to my example I said, right? Let's say Bernie had 80 votes in his preference poll. The number of allotted delegates for that place was 10. That's 80. Let's say 200 people showed up. So 80 divided by 200
is, I don't know.
Or 80 into 200.
I'm a social worker. It's like 2.4.
No, I'm sorry. What did I say?
You said 80. So.
No, 80 showed up, and how many delegates did I say?
10, so 800.
800 divided by...
divided by 200.
No, let's say a different number than that, right? 220.
220.
So it comes to, let's say, 3.78, whatever it is. You round that up to 4.
And they get 4 delegates.
Yeah, if it's on the north side of 3.5, it's 3.51 or over... Or I guess they don't round down. I guess they only go to one decimal point.
They only go to one decimal point,
so
because
if it's 3.6 or up, that goes to 4. If it's 3.4 or down, that goes to a 3.
Right.
Now, sometimes you come to 0.5s. And if you come to a 0.5, and that means the other person comes to a 0.5, because the number of delegates awarded has to add up to the total number of delegates for that precinct site.
And because we're not magicians and we can't cut people in half...
Not yet.
You can't, not yet.
You can't have half a delegate.
You can't have half a delegate.
You can't send someone in and be like, okay, you're 50-50 for Hillary and Bernie, make up your mind there. No.
No.
It's like you have to have a pledged delegate.
I mean, you can't have one personality vote for one and then...
So how do you figure it out? Arm wrestling?
Yeah.
Maybe a battle of... Maybe iocane poisoning in the glasses and a blindfold.
It's whoever, like, how do you do survives,
it? They do it with a coin flip. Now, I learned tonight there's also rules for who picks heads and tails, although it wasn't quite clear. They said that the overall precinct captain decides early on who gets to call heads or tails in that scenario first. And then it varies, like in basketball with the possession arrow.
Overtime, you know, you get the other team gets to
the possession arrow, basically.
Right.
So that's how it works. Now, I may have just explained it horribly, but that's how they do it. If you can't have half a delegate,
right.
So if it's a 0.5, they have to decide that one extra delegate by a coin flip.
Right.
Now, that's just a county delegate. So that's for when they showed these Hillary winning 6 of 8 coin flips, that means she won 6 of 8, 0.5 delegates for the county. So what that added up to was so infinitesimal that it had barely any bearing whatsoever on the final results, even as close as that one was.
Yep. Because remember,
it didn't matter.
County delegates go to the congressional district conventions, and then that goes to the state.
So yeah, so when you see on MSNBC when they say state get delegates won, that's an estimate.
Right.
There's nothing – that's just what they're guessing based on the numbers they're getting. And I know that's confusing too.
Yep.
But then the whole caucus/primary process is kind of a cluster. If you are in the weeds on it, it can be very, very confusing. So now that you're totally confused – yes, coin flips are a necessary evil of the caucus process. No, they're not rigged. No, they don't decide state delegates.
Because we don't cut people in half. That's what I got. That's what I walked away with.
We don't cut people in half. We can't.
That's the America 2016. We don't cut people in half to vote.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Vote Democrat. We don't cut people in half.
Vote Democrat. It's our new motto.
So at least the Republicans won't be having that problem
tomorrow.
Because they're not using any math. So there's no 0.5s to worry about.
No, they don't have any point anything. They don't even have, I don't know what they, I don't know what, I'm looking at this chart that Travis has for figuring out delegate math, which makes a lot of sense to me. And I'm thinking, what parts of this are the Republicans going to actually fill in? The total number of delegates, clearly.
No, they don't. They're not going to use this at all.
So they just.
Because there's no straw poll.
Right.
There's no preference poll.
So they just show up and
everybody's in a big room and they try to get everybody's attention and say, now we're going to vote for delegates based on, I don't know, if again, I maybe they weren't around the room whispering, hey, I'm for Trump, vote for me, you know,
right.
I'm for Carson, vote for me,
which is so Democratic
in some ways, it kind of is our democracy. Or like I said, but are they going to do it? There's got to be like unofficial instructions for GOP
caucus. I would love
people
to get
out
my
there.
Hands on that.
Like
if they're a precinct captain, what
or
are
or
their
they're just
going
to go straight to the vote. But then those people running for county delegates are going to give their stump speech for whomever.
Yeah,
and then they'll vote based on that.
I mean,
and then the people aren't going to really understand that. They're going to be like, I guess I'm voting for Trump, and they sort of are, but not really, not officially.
No. No, so we may get delegate counts tomorrow.
We'll get delegate counts. But we won't know what they mean.
And they won't be committed. So,
well, no, we won't even get delegate counts because that's already predetermined.
Right. So, I mean, like, preference, like, delegate, like, I don't know. I don't know. Are we even going to get, like, a breakdown?
How could we? If there's no poll, how could we? You know what? What they could do is once the county delegates are elected, each precinct chair can say, well, who are you pledged to?
Oh,
and then they could, and then they could report each
the pledge numbers,
and that'll look the same, although it totally isn't.
It's totally not. And I think one of the biggest take home messages from this is to realize that as far as Colorado goes, and I don't think this applies to any other state for the Republicans, but as far as Colorado Republican delegates, they are walking into the convention not bound by the rules that every other state delegate is bound by, in that they don't have to follow this whole idea of being tied to the results of the party, you know, the results of their state. So in a contested convention, in something that is, we don't have a clear front runner, which it's looking likely that we're going to have a national convention, a Republican national convention without a front runner, There may very well be.
Well, we'll have a front runner, but not anybody who's claimed like, the magic number of delegates, maybe. Right.
So we may have a brokered convention on the part of the GOP.
Where they're hoping for a second and third vote.
Right. And in that case, the Colorado delegates are...
They could throw all their weight behind John Kasich.
They could do whatever they wanted to do. They could...
Interesting.
They could go behind...
I mean, that'll rip the party to pieces.
It would rip the party to pieces. Yep. And,
there will be real lawsuits.
Yeah.
And then it'll go to a 4-4 Supreme Court.
Yeah, where we don't have a fifth Supreme Court justice to decide. This is really, yeah. I mean, we're talking about, and I don't know, again, I don't know how many delegates we're talking about from the state of Colorado. If it's
Let's guess 60-something.
I mean, that's what it is for the Democrats, so I don't know why it would be much different.
That number's not nothing.
It's not nothing, especially if you're talking about a super close fight and the Colorado delegates get together and decide to throw all of their support and weight behind one particular candidate.
Who's not the leader.
Who's not the leader.
Ostensibly looks like it'll be Trump at this point, although that could change, but... really interesting.
So Colorado delegates could be if you'll forgive the expression, they could be the establishment Trump card. Sorry, I couldn't help it.
Well, I think it's like this. If we get reports out tomorrow where the GOP precinct chairs they're going to say, okay, this precinct is reporting, you know, 8 for Trump, 4 for Cruz, 3 for Rubio, whatever.
Yeah.
Then it'll look like we don't know what we're talking about. But understand that those results are fucking crazy in terms of the democratic process.
Yes, yes, because those are the things that maybe might happen, but they're not. The Republicans clearly are not bound to this idea of. I mean, we were talking about it last time.
Can they even report that if officially they have no preference?
I have no idea. And that's what I'm saying. I don't know.
I guess you can report anything.
You could report anything. I don't know what the GOP... Like, when the little ticker flashes across the screen tomorrow, I don't know what's going to be on that for the Republican side of the Colorado results.
I bet there's going to be something.
Clearly, they have to come out with something, because if they didn't, they would look like complete inept idiots. But I don't know what that's going to mean. I don't know. I mean, I guess that's the bottom line. If you look at those numbers,
well,
I don't know
what that
means.
Well, maybe they'll all say uncommitted. Or maybe a big chunk of them will. And then that'll be a story, because the media won't really understand what has happened.
Yep.
So they'll be like, oh my God, 50% in Colorado say they're uncommitted. It's like, it's because there was no polling.
Yep. So I can say we won't get straw poll results tomorrow for the Republicans. We won't get that. We know that for sure.
No, and you don't get, and this what pisses people off too, there's no individual raw count on the Democratic side.
No, there is not. Which is, I think, unfortunate.
I do too, but that's just the way it's done. They don't do a secret ballot like they do typically on the Republican side. They're not doing it here, but they do it that way.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and we can come back some general thoughts about Super Tuesday and how the polls are looking and all that stuff. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We are on Super Tuesday Eve here on Monday, February 29th. Tomorrow, March 1st, of course. Super Tuesday, we'll be caucusing. I'll be a caucus captain. We'll be Skyping in live. Pierre will have Mission Control down in Texas for the Irreverent Testimony live stream. All kinds of exciting stuff happening. Now let's talk about what we think is going to happen according to the polls. It looks like Hillary's going to have a huge, huge monster night and take a commanding delegate lead. As a Bernie supporter, I would like to think so, but based on what happened in South Carolina and some of the polls that have come out in the last 2 days, it's just not looking too likely. And a lot of people are sort of scratching their heads now and wondering what's going on and what about the youth movement and isn't this bad that, you know, we're alienating the youth movement. And I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but based on a lot of the polling, the exit polling I've seen so far, I'm saying, where is this big youth vote, this big youth turnout vote? Because it's coming out to much, much lower percentages than Obama in 2008. So for all the big numbers at the rallies and for all the media buzz and the Bernie bros and the Bernie girls and everything else we've heard, so far they're not showing up en masse. At least maybe they did in Iowa and New Hampshire, but the last three contests, Nevada, South Carolina, what was the other one?
South Carolina, Nevada, Iowa, New Hampshire.
Oh, I guess that's it.
Yeah, those are the four. I missed one.
And the last two, they haven't.
Yeah.
In fact, in South Carolina, I think it was down to only 12% was under 30, yeah. Whereas yeah. in 2008, it was 18%.
Yep.
And Nevada, it was really low as well.
Yep.
So where are they? Where are you guys? You know, this is supposed to be a revolution, and if we get crushed, we get crushed, but we get crushed showing up with our boots on. And I don't know if it's that they're seeing the polling and it's not looking great, so they're staying home. But that wasn't the case in Nevada, where it looked like it was even Steven.
Yep.
So I don't know. I can't buy into that narrative that, oh no, we're going to alienate this whole youth vote when the youth vote isn't even showing up to vote for Bernie in the first place.
Yeah, you know, Hillary, for all of the criticisms of her, she's really, really, really good at politics. And she plays to her strengths, and her strengths are clearly in the votes of the people of color in this country and the different voting blocks that have come out for her.
Yeah.
And we know from general elections in years past, those are typically the people who show up to the polls in the general election. So, I mean, I think there is something to be said for where is this youth vote, and
yeah.
why isn't...
I'd like to know where yeah. it is.
And I think, you know, is it more that this is like a, you know, what did we used to call the people, the social justice warriors online that aren't actually getting out and doing the work?
Is that the case?
Or I don't know.
Or is it that all these thousands of people that are showing up to these rallies, those are the only ones actually showing up to caucus and primary? Maybe. Because that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
When you look at the raw numbers...
Yeah.
In South Carolina,
yeah.
I think for the entire state, you had numbers almost equivalent to like what showed up to his rallies there, which is crazy.
That is crazy. And, you know, you made a really good point, Travis, in that Bernie didn't really campaign there. He had given up on South Carolina quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
Which
is, yeah, but they were hoping to at least narrow the gap to 20 or so.
Right. And
What was it, 50-something?
And
it was
like
76-24 at the end of the day.
Yeah. And one of the most interesting demographic results to come out of South Carolina for me was the fact that Hillary took a larger percentage of the African American vote than even Obama did in 2008.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
And that is amazing. And I wonder if we are, as you know, as this kind of politically aware middle class white community that's really,
we are not tapped into what's really
what
going
is
on.
Really going on. And Hillary had indicated in her victory speech in South Carolina that five of the mothers of some of the shooting victims that is high profile African American men who have been gunned down were campaigning with her. I think there's something. And instead of being defensive and obstinate about it, I wonder if there's an opportunity to get more curious here.
I know I am. Well, let's back up a little even. Let's look at Iowa. There was a surprise tie, essentially,
mm-hmm.
and then a big win in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And then the narrative was Hillary's campaign is circling the drain again. It's blowing up. She's going to fire her whole staff. It's in disarray. And obviously that wasn't the case. And then if you look at the polling – and people said, oh, okay, yeah, sure. She's still got these sizable leads in these southern states and with African-Americans. But Bernie's got all the momentum, and he's picking up these endorsements from some prominent African-American people, from some leaders, the Killer Mike, from some other folks. So, you know, he can definitely turn the tide here. And not only has that not happened, it's gone in reverse.
Yep.
Like, in a major way.
Yep.
Like, after that point, after Bernie-mentum, Hillary has sort of closed the deal in these southern states.
Yeah.
So what's going on here? We don't really know.
I don't know. You know, I'm not. I respect, you know, how people vote and how they think and their experience and their life, and I don't ever want to assume that I understand what motivates them, what draws them. You know, I think you made an excellent point in the last podcast by saying, you know, we talk about, you know, I think the Republicans see it as being this huge liability tying Hillary to Obama.
Yeah.
And in these communities,
for their voters in their primaries,
right?
Sure.
And in these communities, that is her greatest strength.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would love nothing more than to continue the Obama legacy, and I tend to agree with them.
So maybe all the Beltway talk for how Hillary Clinton doesn't know how to run a campaign and she's a bad campaigner and she's a terrible messenger. Maybe she actually does know what she's doing.
Yeah.
Because she took the latest insurgent candidate and at least at the moment now is kind of putting the kibosh on him when he had nothing but momentum after the second primary.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it's still not over.
And that's with a potential scandal hanging over her head.
Yes.
Which we haven't even got to yet.
Got to yet.
But let me deliver the bad news, fellow Bernie supporters. I'm going to read you off some polls of what we're looking at tomorrow. So these are polls that were released today. We got Texas, huge delegate-rich state, Clinton plus 42.
Jesus.
Massachusetts, this is one where Bernie was expected to do really well, right? It's bordering Vermont. He's been campaigning there. He had some leads early on. Right now, Clinton 11. And I've actually seen three or four polls in the last few days that shows Clinton about plus 10 or so.
Mm.
Alabama, Clinton plus 48.
Mm.
Oklahoma, good news, Sanders plus 5.
Mm.
So that's a bright spot. Well, he's been campaigning there.
Yeah, that's true.
But Georgia, another big delegate-rich state, Clinton plus 47. Another Texas from today shows it much, much closer than the other one I had, Clinton plus 20, but still a big lead. Another Massachusetts shows Clinton plus 3, still with a lead. Michigan, Clinton plus 20. So now let's go back. These are polls from Sunday. Clinton, Tennessee, plus 26. Another Georgia, Clinton plus 34. Virginia, Clinton plus 20. Massachusetts, Clinton plus 8. Go back to Friday. Virginia, Clinton plus 17. Florida, Clinton plus 25. And then we don't have to talk about South Carolina. That already happened. And then I think that mostly covers Wisconsin, Sanders plus 1. Is Wisconsin tomorrow on the docket? I think so.
Maybe.
Pennsylvania, yeah. Clinton plus 22. So.
And I've heard an argument. I don't know if, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theories and paranoia running around recently, but I've heard an argument that, you know, the DNC set up the states for Super Tuesday in order to bolster Hillary Clinton's...
Well, but aren't they the same as they were in 12?
No, they're 12? Not, actually.
They're set up different.
Yeah, so they're set up differently. When they ran their primaries and their caucuses are different, in a different order, and that a lot of the southern states came early on, whereas mm-hmm. in 2012 they didn't so much. And so I was reading this, you know, W. Wasserman Schultz is setting it up to, you know...
Was
she that clairvoyant, A? And B... You have results from Massachusetts. You have results from Michigan. You have results from Colorado. You have results from Florida. We're talking about big swing states in the general election.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think the argument holds water. First of all, I don't like the argument that Democrats in southern states shouldn't have as much of an influence on who our candidate
is.
Yeah,
I'll get to that in a second.
You know, because they're, you know, they're in a state that's not going to vote for us anyway, so who cares what they think, which I've heard an argument about that, and that's really... That's upsetting to me, but...
Well, it is worth noting, right, that where Hillary is running up these huge margins, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, Texas, these are solidly red states.
Yes.
We're not going to win these states.
No.
But so what?
But so what?
Trump is going to rack up delegates in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Vermont and Massachusetts.
And he's not going to win those states.
He's not going to win those states.
And I think there's something to be said for the Democrats that live in those states. They still are American citizens who have a voice in who their party candidate is.
Absolutely.
So I bristle at that.
well, it's an interesting footnote. You can't take it any further than that and say that these should count less somehow.
Right.
Now, if you really believe that, then, you know, lobby to get rid of the stupid Electoral College.
Right.
Which I'm 100% for.
Yes.
And so I think it's nuts.
And we did address, you know, if the party's running this system of picking candidates, it's not something that we want to continue to see, that's a larger discussion. And I think that's a discussion worth having. But to disenfranchise different, you know, voters in different states because, well, they're not going to vote, you know, their state isn't going to vote for our candidate anyway.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, it doesn't ring true to the values of the Democratic Party.
Absolutely not. Doesn't ring true to the values
of
Americans. Values of democracy, period.
That's democracy. And I also think that it's not a true argument. Not only is it not a, you know, value-laden argument, it's not a true argument. I mean, yeah. Talking about her, if she indeed wins Massachusetts and Michigan, and I don't know when Ohio is, but that's a big
one. That's later on.
So Florida, you know, if she does indeed win these to Colorado, I mean, I think we're going to be a swingy state in the fall. And so I think she can run well across the country. I don't think there's this argument of the only places she's going to win is the South, and we're totally screwed in the general because she's going to win the primary in states that aren't
that assumes that, you know, the independents or the Bernie voters will just stay home or switch sides,
right.
Which some of them are trying to do. My friend on Twitter who's going around supposedly canvassing for Bernie and making people sign no Hillary no matter what pledges but they're doing that on the other side too for Trump. And it, you know, you forget that the primary process, you get very, very invested in a person.
Yep.
And feelings get hurt when it doesn't go your way.
Yeah.
And that transcends party for a while.
Yep.
At the end of the day, there's still a long time. Even between the DNC, the National Convention, which is in July, and, you know, there's still, you know, 3-4 months.
Yep.
There's plenty of time to mend fences and heal, and I have no doubt that if this does pan out the way it's going, that Bernie is going to, you know, do the right thing and campaign hard, I would assume.
Oh, he will.
On Clinton's behalf, and do his best to get those young voters, keep them involved, and get them out.
Yeah, and I do think that Bernie, you know, plays a long ball. Clearly he plays a long ball. I mean, he's been doing this for, you know, he's not a new kid on the block. He's been doing this for a hell of a long time.
And he's got to stay in and try to push the agenda to the things
he wants.
You know, as long and as hard as he can and you know, have a spot, a key spot at the convention.
At the convention and then beyond. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there is absolutely an argument to be made that even if Bernie Sanders does not become the next candidate and president of the United States, he's not done. And his party and his movement, this awakening.
Well, it better not be.
He's better not be. I mean, this isn't about the, you know, I've not been fond of playing the you know, the cult of personality. And this isn't about him. It's about where are we going as a country. And if we're going to have that conversation, Bernie is not done. And in fact, I think he could be freed to do more than even being in this.
Well, he's got his name on the map now.
Yep.
He was just this obscure senator from Vermont. I had heard of him, of course, being a political junkie that I am. But I guarantee you, your average American liberal had not.
Yes.
For the most part.
And now his name is synonymous with, much like Trump is synonymous with whatever
a lot
it is
of shit.
Synonymous with. His name is now synonymous with this this awakening of we deserve better.
Yeah.
We deserve better.
Activist progressivism.
Yep. We deserve better than the shit sandwich we are getting fed by our establishment politics.
Where the Bernie movement falls apart is when you get down to brass tacks and think about, okay, what candidate Sanders is proposing and what President Sanders could actually do.
Yep.
Or even scarier, if it happened, what that would mean. And I listened to Arliss Bunny's podcast this morning, and she was talking about what it would mean for the healthcare industry in general if we went this overnight Medicaid for all thing that he wants to do. It's beautiful in theory. The logistics of it are kind of nightmarish, and that's why there's something to be said for incrementalism. Yet I'm still supporting Bernie because I think that the movement toward that is important.
Is important. And I do think it's always the law of unintended consequences when it comes to policy. Always. You're never going to be able to predict all of the different ways in which what you are intending to do is actualized.
Well, this is my argument where I differ with Rachel, right?
Right.
Is that I think Bernie understands, and I think most of his supporters probably understand, is it realistic that Bernie Sanders on day one goes to Congress and pushes through a Medicare for All bill? No. But he's got the tailwind and the momentum to move towards that, maybe more so than somebody that just said, I'm going to do this piecemeal.
Yeah.
Because if you're telegraphing that, I think it's, in theory, if it's still a hostile Congress, let's say that Hillary right. takes over, it could be easier to buttress that.
Right. Well, here's a really interesting thing that Hillary proposed.
Or rejected is what I meant.
And I heard about this on a podcast earlier this week or last week. Hillary Clinton proposed the public option again. And she brought that back to her policy table. And the way that she did it, and I happen to know kind of how this would work because I work a lot with waiver systems uh-huh. in the state government. And what she proposed was essentially a waiver program whereby states could use, you know, the Affordable Care Act as it's written has in its ability to grant waivers to states to use different
sure.
policies.
Sure.
And so I thought it was interesting because I'm like, yeah, it's not a complete
yeah.
overhaul.
Here's my problem with that,
Go.
Right? Again, I'm thinking fully pragmatically. A lot of the rich northern states will say, sure, let's do that. Who already have robust
right.
exchanges and Medicare and Medicaid problems anyway. The red states or the poor people, they're going to reject it anyway
yeah.
with the Republican legislatures. They're going to say no way. They won't even expand federal yeah. Medicaid dollars to help them pay. And so they just pay it out of their pocket when poor people show up at the emergency room to spite Obama.
Right.
I mean, literally, that's what they're doing.
That's
and
true.
It put Kansas in a $1 billion hole. Yep. It's cost Texas billions.
Yeah.
And they're doing it for pure politics and to satiate their base because they've conditioned their base to believe anything associated with Obamacare is pure evil,
right.
even expanding a previously existing government healthcare system
right.
with federal dollars. It's lunacy. But these are the people you vote for in these states.
Yeah.
And this is why you're $1 billion in the hole. And instead of getting somebody preventative care that has the state on the hook for a couple hundred bucks a month, they come to the emergency room and that's $10,000 out of the taxpayer's pocket because guess what? Poor people aren't going to voluntarily die on the streets if they can't afford health insurance.
And how dare they?
Right.
How dare they, really?
How dare they?
How dare they not just, you know, decrease the surplus population, which is really the argument
like
that
Ebenezer
they like
Scrooge
to make.
Would say, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, no, that reminds me, the people, I heard this talked about today on a podcast, that we're bringing back the Let Them Die.
Yep.
Remember in I think it was 2012, and Wolf Blitzkrieg asked Ron Paul, like, well, what would you do if a poor person, you know, mm-hmm. can't afford insurance, let him die? And the audience was like, yeah, let him die.
Yep.
That was
I
a good look
that.
For the GOP. But now you had, in the last debate, you had Trump, to Trump's credit, every now and then he says something to his credit, says, okay, we're not going to let people die in the streets. That's just crazy. It's like the few sensible thing he says. And then Rubio and Cruz pounce on him. Aha, see? He says he's not going to let people die in the streets. What kind of conservative is that? I mean, literally,
right.
that's what they said. And
I
I'm just like, oh my God, these people.
They're like vying for who can be the most awful.
Ghoulish.
Yeah, they
like
are
these
ghoulish.
People think they're going to win the presidency.
Yeah.
Yelling at a guy who's, and you literally yelling, how can you vote for this guy?
Right.
How can he call himself a conservative? He says he's not going to let people die in the street.
Because really what Trump wanted to say is, they can die in the alley where I don't have to see them. That's what he really wanted to say.
Maybe. And no matter what he meant,
it doesn't matter.
The sentiment was right. And for it to be rejected
yep.
and for them to scream, see, he's no
yep.
conservative. He wants the government to make sure poor people don't die in the street.
Yep. It's this sick manifestation of these culture wars that we've been having.
Yeah.
You know, for decades.
Everybody
now.
Pours a welfare queen
yep.
and they're actually living high on the hog
yep.
on government money.
And we're all just, you know, temporarily displaced millionaires
yes,
waiting, you know,
yes.
waiting for that really that next paycheck that's going to take
that's
us to that level.
That's all that matters, is that our chance
yeah.
to be a Trump.
Yeah.
You know, not to live a comfortable life and yeah. have our health care and education taken care of, but our chance to grab the lottery ticket to just be filthy, stickin' rich, and screw everybody else in the meantime.
America.
See, that's what the Bernie movement is all about,
yeah.
the rejection of that.
The rejection of that, and I think that's such an important... I mean, regardless politically what happens, I think that philosophically that conversation absolutely must happen for the sake of the survival of this country.
I would think so.
We have to have the conversation about when does the pendulum shift the other way? When do we start talking again about the fact that people are not poor because they are terrible people who don't work?
In a way, it kind of is. The perverse thing about Trump's popularity is the other side of the gross nativism is that he's has a lot of populist overtones in there, right? He's talking about, you know, reigning in Wall Street. And,
right.
And he's talking about, you know, we can't let people die. We have to take care of people. Like, oh, yeah, I hate Obamacare, but we're going to have something that covers everybody.
Right.
That's not what the Republicans are saying. No. I mean, they're sort of saying it, but the rest of the Republicans, I mean. And so, like, yeah, it's in there. It's just their anger and frustration comes from a place where they're still blaming the poor black people who are getting welfare.
They're kicking down instead of
and
punching
immigrants
up.
And immigrants. Immigrants are coming and taking all the health care and good paying jobs.
Yeah, these Central American children. Yeah,
I mean, are getting all these great manufacturing jobs.
Yeah,
that have been
clearly
shipped to China.
You know, but I think it is easier to kick down than punch up, and
yes,
we've known that for a long time. It's just easier to other people and put them in these boxes and these categories, so we don't have to feel the weight of accountability for.
Right. Well, that's what disgusts me, because the when you're talking about the resistance that Trump gets from the GOP establishment, like the good folks at the National Review and the Cato Institute, and
they're so good.
They're so good, right? It's like, oh yeah, they'll pile on and say, geez, Trump is saying these awfully racially tinged things, but what they really hate is that, hey, you know, he's talking against this gimmitarianism.
Yep.
And he's realizing that there's a core of people that call themselves conservatives that has nothing to do with, like, Reaganomics and tax breaks for super wealthy and the freedom for venture capitalists to move thousands of American jobs overseas, because in the end it's great for America. Like, they don't see it that way. Oh, sure, they're suspicious of black people.
Right.
But, like, not for the same reasons that you guys are pushing.
Right.
And they're also not they're scared of ISIS, but they're also not for perpetual war necessarily either. And there's this disconnect now that's happening in the Republican Party that has these people scratching their head. Well, why is Trump so popular? You know, he's not even quoting Paul Wolfowitz. He quotes Mussolini.
Badly.
He's not quoting William F. Buckley and Paul Wolfowitz, though.
So it feels to me like it's almost like this, you know, we were talking on the last, or I guess a couple of podcasts ago, about the proxy war.
Yeah.
And it almost feels like that's what this election is now. It's become this proxy war between the ideas of, and I don't want to get too large to say like capitalism and anti-capitalism, but it's almost like this idea of consumerism at all costs.
Yeah.
And growth at all costs, and whatever
scare quotes around growth.
Yeah, of course, you know, growth. And then this whole idea that we've lost our moral compass, we've lost our way. Like, this is not, you know, and that's the side of me that goes to the Bernie side, and then the side of me politically that goes to the Hillary side is, what can we actually accomplish in the direction that we're trying to go?
And again, in a weird, perverse way, the Trump people feel the same way.
They do.
Except they blame the gay people and the black people and ISIS.
Yeah. So Bernie is more like a symbiosis with these people. Trump is a parasite of these people. Trump
exactly.
is someone who has tapped into this angst.
Populist
anger.
But from a nativist
this
side.
This ennui. But he's tapped into it from this, like, I'm gonna milk it, and I'm going to use it to further my own power. Whereas Bernie is kind of joining with it, and like, I am empathetic and I'm with you in it, not I want to ride it to power. And so,
and Hillary is more of like the old Democratic
Hillary's
party
just like,
as usual.
Kinda, yeah. She's, you know, I think
borrowing some of the lines, but not.
She's, yeah.
It's like,
I think,
yeah, I don't
she's
really
not
feel
play,
it.
She's not playing a big game. I mean, I think she's playing a pragmatic game. I think it's a helpful game. I think it's especially in the face of what destruction could come on the other side. I
yeah,
think
but
she's a
still,
good buffer.
She's look, to do what she needs to do, we have to take back the Senate.
Absolutely.
And we have to make gains in the House, and
yep.
we have to pick up some governorships, frankly, and move
yep.
some state houses. And the only way she's going to do that is getting those Bernie kids on
yep.
board. She's not going to get all of them, forget that.
No.
But she's still got work to do, and she still hasn't refined that message yet.
And I do think we need to be, you know, I think the Senate needs to be a larger conversation. I sat in on a call earlier this week, a town hall call with Michael Bennett, and while he's not my absolute favorite candidate, you know, or favorite senator, I think he, you know, it definitely was clear to me that he's running on Obama's legacy, which I liked hearing, because unlike 2012, when they were all running, like, to the hills away from it. On this call, he was very clear to say, you know, these are the gains we've made, and I want to continue.
Stupid was that? That Democratic incumbents and a few challengers said, well, Obama's deeply unpopular right now. I better run away from him, thinking that they were going to get
where?
Those voters. The only thing they did was alienate the base.
Yep.
And depress turnout even more. And then the virulent anti-Obama people were dead set on voting Republican no matter what.
Yep.
It was the most self-defeating strategy I've ever seen.
Well, if there's anything Democrats are good at, it's coming up with really self-defeating strategies.
That was awful. That really was
a big one. And so I was glad, you know, that was one highlight of that call. I mean, he covered some pretty general things about fire mitigation in the state, which is a big issue here in Colorado. And
Fortunately, we've had a few wet seasons now, so it's not as bad right now, but it'll turn around again.
It'll turn around again. I mean, we've had a really dry couple of weeks, and, you know, if you've lived here long enough, you kind of get that foreboding. So I think he talked about that. He talked about Social Security. He talked about the Supreme Court. So lots of people were asking questions about what are the Democrats going to do.
Well, that's helping. The Republican obstructionism is helping, especially in swing Senate states where important Senate seats are up for grabs. Their obstructionism, at least right now, I mean, that could fade in a couple weeks and people could stop caring about it. But right now, places where we got to get Toomey out, we got to get Portman out, we got to get Ron Johnson out. Yep. It's like people are like, no, you assholes need to let Obama, you know.
And so the Republicans have 24 seats that they're going to be contesting in the fall, and the Democrats have 6 that they need to hold. And so the math looks positive. I'm not going to say, yay.
It's not a slam dunk, but we have a really good chance of taking back the Senate.
And we're not going to get anywhere close to taking back the House until at least 2020, because they've gerrymandered the fuck out of that place.
Yeah.
And then, you know, statewide races. You know, there's things coming up that, you know, presidential races always get a lot of the heat and a lot of the light. But when it comes to what really matters and what really affects us day to day, a lot of stuff coming up that we need to be tuned into. You know, you all talked about, you and Rachel talked about the bill that's that's on the ballot this year for universal health care coverage in the state of Colorado. That's going to be a fascinating conversation come the next few months.
It is, but the problem again is, I grant you, 8 out of 10 Coloradans know nothing about it.
Yep.
They don't know anything about it. It's certainly Democrats.
Yep.
So the outreach still sucks. The organization still sucks. They're leaving it to us, us laymen who are not affiliated or certainly not on the payroll of the DNC whatsoever to try to do it on their behalf. So we still need way more local and state level involvement, grassrootsy type stuff.
Yep.
This could be a good conduit with Bernie, but since Bernie and the DNC seem to be at loggerheads, whether it is real or imagined that. You know, Wasserman Schultz is putting her foot on the scale for Hillary and is hostile to the Bernie campaign.
Well, we didn't mention the fact that the vice chair of the DNC just resigned.
Resigned to support Bernie.
Resigned to support Gabby, what is her name, Gabby Tulsard?
Which is interesting, but will not change anything as far as the race goes. In fact, it only just goes to highlight how we're kind of in disarray at the leadership position.
Yeah, I think, and that's kind of my point, is that something... You know, clearly something is going on with the Democratic National Committee and their leadership positions and how this has all gone with down this primary.
And I don't know enough about it to understand the sort of board of directors, where what they think, why she's still in control and why she's seemingly 100% safe, even though she's highly, highly,
highly
unliked within her own party. And then again, so is Rince Priebus, but, you know, he's trying to juggle flaming skulls.
So maybe what we're watching is kind of the denouement of the power of, you know, these parties to kind of run the show. I mean,
well, I wish that would go a step further and we get rid of the damn two-party system anyway.
Yeah.
But trying to work within it
incrementally, Travis. We're working incrementally.
Well, everybody's scared to go that way, because you split either one of the parties, then it's going to kill
their power
all over the place.
Right.
Now the Republicans may just do it anyway.
I think I was saying to someone the other day that I feel like historically we're watching the disintegration of a modern political party, and it's fascinating in a way. And I may be wrong. You know, that may
they
be
always find something to unite around, though, they, don't they?
Yeah, well, like, they're not going to have Obama, but...
Have you seen any of the Fox News clips in the past 24 hours?
No,
they finally came to Trump's defense.
Oh, great.
When he refused to disavow David Duke and the KKK.
Oh, well, at least they found something they agree with him on.
They did.
That's fantastic.
They did. They,
so,
oh, this is overblown. Why are you making a big deal? Well, if he should speak for this, then Hillary Clinton has to talk about her association with Robert Byrd, because Robert Byrd was in the Klan back in the 40s.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, they're really saying this. So I'm like, oh, finally.
So fascism, that's what they can unite around. Yeah, racism, KKK. Good. Okay. We found a new Republican platform. That's fantastic. Woo!
That didn't surprise me that much.
Doesn't surprise me.
But I was going to think, what was it going to be for them to sort of finally jump on the Trump bandwagon?
And maybe that was it.
That was it.
Yeah, David Duke. Woo, man. It's one thing we definitely didn't see coming, that they would jump on that one. But hey, whatever works for the Republicans to figure that out. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen in the next... I don't know. I mean, tomorrow looks pretty clear for the Democratic side.
Yeah, well, let's talk about what Bernie can do. I think he can win Colorado. I think he can win Minnesota.
Yep.
He can win Oklahoma.
Yep.
Massachusetts, are they caucusing? I want to say they're caucusing.
I think so.
So that, you know, you never know with a caucus.
Yep.
She's been polling well the last few days there, but could be close. You never know.
All about turnout.
If he does that and does a little, but see, there's no indication he's going to do any better in the South based on what happened in South Carolina. Like, he was down 30, 35, 40 points, and then you figured, well, he can do better than this. It'll tighten up, and if he only loses by 15 or 20, that's something. But if these go the way South Carolina went, she's just going to be running up these huge margins.
Yep. And it's all about delegate math.
And we talk about Texas and Georgia and Tennessee. These are pretty robust numbers of delegates that are going to be awarded, and Bernie could find himself waking up Wednesday morning with an insurmountable deficit.
He could.
Which doesn't mean he's going to stop.
No.
It doesn't mean we should stop. It doesn't mean I'll stop.
Right.
But stop the presses at that point, literally? I mean, everybody's kind of expecting it, but nobody's quite ready to jump the gun yet and talk about what this means.
Yeah.
But I'm realistic enough to understand what it means. But granted, things could happen, right?
Things
could
happen.
What if, just for the sake of argument, Thursday Hillary gets indicted?
Yeah, I mean, or...
I mean, one in a million shot as far as I'm concerned, but what if?
Yeah, or something happens internationally or something. I mean, I think that, you know, look at the death of Scalia. Nobody saw that coming. And I don't know what impact that's going to have in the fall, but my guess is that it's going to have something. And that's not going to change our primary race necessarily, but... I think that anything could happen, and I think that it is premature to say. Momentum shifts in politics are like it's this, you know, sociological effect. You just kind of watch them ebb and flow, and you know, getting too attached to one up or down is always it's always a cautionary tale.
And I'm less concerned than most liberals about right now the participation gap in primaries and caucuses so far. And for two reasons. Well, I am disappointed that part of that lack of turnout is that this Bernie revolution isn't materializing and people actually showing up to caucus and primary form.
Yeah.
They're showing up to rallies, and then, like, those very same people are the only ones showing up to caucus and primary.
Right. They're showing up on petitions on Facebook, but I'm not seeing a whole lot of them.
So far. Like, please prove me wrong tomorrow.
Yeah.
But, like, right now, that's kind of what it looks like.
Yep.
On the other side, it's Trump mania.
Yeah.
It's the best show in town, and so you have a bunch of Trump people, a bunch of anti-Trump people showing up. Eventually, you're not going to have Trump and anti-Trump on the ballot.
Or you might.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. That would be great for us.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
But you're probably not going to have Trump and anti-Trump on the ballot that you can combine into a Frankenstein's monster of a Republican.
This is a terrible line of thinking. I'm, like, picturing this
monster. But it's a reason for Democrats not to panic, right?
No, there's no reason. I mean, there's absolutely no reason to panic. Unless
everybody turns around and lines up behind Trump.
I mean, we clearly have the two best candidates on either side of the aisle. There's no question about that.
Do you see independents flocking to Trump?
No.
Because independents, this is the thing about independents, right? They really are independent in a lot of ways. They listen to policy. They also are not partisan. So
I don't know what policy they could possibly listen to that has come out of the mouth of Trump or would come out of the mouth of Trump, other than we're going to build a wall. I haven't heard a coherent or any sort of tangible policy other than he contradicts himself all the time and uses very vague adjectives.
Well, and that and nobody really calls him on it on the Republican debate stage because that's all style.
But if he gets up against Hillary Clinton,
and they start getting into policy, what's he going to do?
He's going to call her a bitch and leave the stage. I mean, I really don't know what he would do. I mean, I see him. I think Trump will melt down before the general, especially if he's the candidate. I mean,
yeah, but he's already kind of melted down a few times, and
nobody cares.
Upped his popularity.
Yeah, but he's,
but that's on the Republican.
That's
side.
That's on the Republican
in,
side.
In a general side, with the whole nation watching,
yeah.
and getting ready to cast a vote.
I just
it's
don't.
Gotta, it, yeah, that it's not.
I
gonna,
don't see. I think people see it as being entertaining. I don't honestly see a whole lot of independents, especially independents, being as you know.
Yeah, generally. I'm not going to say they're going to like Hillary. I'm not going to say
right. No, I mean I don't necessarily like her. I mean she's
We like her better probably than your average independent.
Right. Well, that's true.
But your average independent, when they say.
Hillary
I mean,
or Trump.
Sure, some of them will stay home, but most of them will be like, I'm going to do my civic duty, I'm going to vote, I got to pick one of these assholes. And they're going to say, well, this asshole, I don't like her, I don't trust her,
right.
But she clearly knows what she's doing.
Right, other than...
This other guy is a circus clown, I can't elect a circus clown president. Right. Ultimately, I think it comes down to that.
I think so.
Now, maybe that's not terribly inspiring, and if you don't think it's inspiring and you're a Bernie supporter, then, you know, knock on doors and canvas and do your job and get people. Because so far, they're obviously not...
They're not showing up.
They're not showing up.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
And so I think that that's where, I mean, I think that's going to be the decision that gets made in the fall is... And I don't think Trump will go away.
It's not who do we like, it's who's competent.
Yeah. It's who can do the fucking job. And it maybe is not transformative. It's not revolutionary. And, you know, I read this kind of commentary today on my Facebook. I got some really incredible people, very intelligent people that I am friends with and follow, you know. And this one Bernie supporter was saying, you know, Hillary supporters are pragmatic because they're not living paycheck to paycheck, and they're not desperate
enough.
That's
not true.
And it's not true. But
you
think
all those people in South Carolina fit that bill?
Well, and I did say that argument. I was like, I think that is, it's definitely white. It's a definitely white argument to be making. But I think there's something in there of respecting the desperation and whether that's the Trump side, whether that's the Hillary side, where they're coming out, whether that's the Bernie side. There's something in this of respecting the desperation of people who are trying to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a deep abiding respect for that. However that plays out, which is why I've caucused in 2008. It's why I voted in every single election. It's why I just
I wish I wish those people making that argument realize they can affect that much more effectively on the local level to begin with.
Yes.
And they're probably not involved in their local politics whatsoever.
Right.
So I hope that filters through in this election cycle to more people, if nothing else.
Yeah.
I can only hope.
I mean, I think look at, you know, we've talked about the legalization of marijuana before, but look what a transformative impact that's had on our state.
Absolutely.
Good and bad. But, you know, I think it's had a transformative impact, and that was a statewide ballot.
Well, we've learned here, I know I've learned in the past year and a half, that local politics and getting stuff started does make a difference.
We
look at Jefferson School Board with the Wendholz campaign that we're just getting started here, with a lot of other stuff. We also campaigned for the pot tax to not wind up in Tabor and everybody get an $8 check, and that won overwhelmingly.
Yep.
So it can make a difference.
Yep.
And it's not like we're working on this 24/7. We're devoting what little time we have, and it makes a difference.
Yep.
And if we got millions of people to do that, then imagine the difference.
The difference it can make, and that's really where a change is going to happen.
Yep. So that's about going to wrap it up for us. Happy leap year night, day, eve before Super Tuesday, all that jazz. We're going to be live streaming tomorrow at, it is going to be 6:30 Mountain Time, 7:30 Central, East 30 Eastern. So that would be 5:30 Pacific.
5:30 Pacific. Wow, we can do math.
Yeah, sort of. I didn't mention Alaska and Hawaii, but... Or Australia, where we've got some listeners.
Oh.
I have no idea what time it is there.
Yeah.
But for our YouTube live stream, but tune in. We're going to be, Pierre is going to be at Mission Control, and he's going to be bringing you live updates from all over Super Tuesday and some great analysis and all kinds of other stuff. And then we're going to be Skyping in from our different caucus sites, telling you how it's going, giving you the lay of the land, maybe dodging punches.
Yep. And I was just picturing
God only knows what.
Flying paper. Yeah, yeah.
You name it. So tune in, because it's must-see web internet TV. So that's going to do it. I've been Travis, as usual.
I am Molly.
And we'll see you again soon. Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. Good night.